This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
How do we start the show? Glenn, how do we start the show?
Super.
Awesome. So we're back again this week on the Super Extreme Fault. This week, this month, whatever our schedule is that we can get together and watch some extreme wrestling on this hardcore podcast. We promised the Hardcore Heaven 99 last time. We're not getting into it this time, and we're not getting into it. We lied, and we won't get to it next time either, as we'll have some other side project. So it'll be 2 or 3 months before we get to that promise. But stay tuned. It's coming. But instead, we decided to take a little side stop here in the ECW arena for ECW's annual internet fan convention, CyberSlam. They started in 96. Well, it started in 95, but it was a different show. That was like the three-way dance or double tables or something like that. But in 96, they started calling it CyberSlam, and they would invite all the fans on the internet from around the country that was watching ECW, and they would come into the ECW arena. They'd do a Q&A with the different people, and they would do this big fan convention. And this was the show they got, CyberSlam 99. Mark, is it back to fun to be back in the ECW arena?
It's always fun to be back in the ECW arena, as well as back here in the Extreme Vault with you guys. What's up?
Not much. Good. Glenn, are you good?
I'm super.
Perfect. Good. No one's good here. We're either extreme or super, or both.
Or hardcore. Preferably
both. Or hardcore.
Yeah.
I'm hardcore.
So let's get to this fun show. We're watching the commercial DVD release that came out like a year later. So there are some edits where they like cut out the introductions because of music. And strangely enough, the version that I had ended midway through the main event. So on a plus side, we have found the ECW television, and that was able to fill in a little bit of the gaps. And I'm going to be watching the ECW television going forward, too. So we won't be as clueless when we talk about what's going on with storylines and stuff.
That's part of the charm, though. I like that I don't know what's going on. So I'm going to try to remain in the dark.
That's fine. That's perfect.
I probably don't have the time management skills to keep up with that much, so I'll still be clueless.
Perfect. I'll be the only one with any clue.
Well, you're the host.
Oh, that's true. I should have a clue, eh?
You're the host. You should have the most.
The most clue. So we start the show. As always, with every ECW show, it's Joey Styles in the ring welcoming us here, telling us where we are and what the name of the show is. And we didn't get any weird puns this time. It always makes me sad. I always like when Joey Styles is like, no one's innocent tonight. Everyone is guilty as charged, or whatever he says, but nothing with CyberSlam.
Yeah, see, he should have just looked out into the crowd and said, "Hey, guys, want a cyber? Slam!"
Wow. Sure, he should have done that.
You can believe it. Glenn and I did not coordinate that before the show.
Cyber! Hey, Steven! Hey, Steven, you want a cyber? Let's cyber! Cyber Sunday! Wait, no shit. Cyber Slam! Cyber.
Wow. Remember when they used to call it the cyberspace? That seems to have disappeared.
The only people
who still use the prefix cyber are like your grandma who just got a laptop for Christmas and the national intelligence agencies.
Well, since my grandparents are all dead, let's move on to the opening of the show.
Well, I done fucked up then. Oh, wow.
Things are getting really serious really quickly here.
They are. So last show, I speculated when they – I think it was the Dudleys beat up Bob Artiste, that was his end and Steven D'Angelo was taking over as the announcer. But here Bob Artiste is back wearing a neck brace. So I guess he semi-recovered enough to do the announcing, but he has to wear a neck brace to make sure that he's fine. So nice little attention to detail there, ECW. But we got – the opening here, my boy Yoshihiro Tajiri taking on the new FN show, Jerry Lynn. What did you think of this, Mark?
Well, this was a fun little encounter between two guys. I know Tajiri is your personal favorite, and I've been enjoying his little, what we've seen of his run here in ECW so far. And Jerry Lynn's cool too, so I was expecting a fun match, and I got it. And I really liked, they kind of went away from it, but right away, Jerry, you know, they start off with some sort of what I call kicky rolly stuff, where Tajiri's kicking and they end up like rolling around on the mat, restarting. And but Jerry Lynn goes after the leg right away with like a dragon screw and then starts kind of going after it. That story didn't really stick around, but I like the idea of, all right, you're going to kick me? Screw you. I'm going to go after your leg and take out half of what you do. So that was kind of cool. And then these guys did a lot of cool stuff. They did a lot of, like, as you would expect, a lot of aerial stuff. They mixed in some cool submission maneuvers. They did one thing. Jerry Lynn did something that I don't think I'd really seen it before, but Styles referred to it as the Gory Guerrero Special. Yeah. And I don't even know how to describe it, but it looked really cool.
Yeah, it's a move Eddie Guerrero's father, and he kind of did this submission where he put him on your back and kind of held the legs and the arms, and it was his finisher in Mexico at some point.
So, yeah, it was a neat move.
Yeah.
And then we got all the cool signature spots from Tajiri too. I like how he had Lynn in an abdominal stretch and converted that into the tarantula. I thought that was kind of a cool way to get into it. Did the whole handspring back elbow. His acai moonsault into the crowd. You know, they did a lot of the usual crowd stuff. And Tajiri looked like he was having fun here because the ECW crowd was just totally into him, and he was kind of eating it up. You know, he was playing it up a little bit, which was cool. It was kind of the most, I think it's sort of the most personality we saw out of Tajiri so far. And I really liked there was one segment towards the end where it's basically, I called it Tajiri's kicks versus Jerry Lynn's fire, because it's just Tajiri would kick him and then Jerry Lynn would just do like the, do the Hulk Hogan, like pump up, be like, come on, do it again. He'd kick him again. And that was just like a cool sequence, very sort of Japan-y stuff there. And then kind of just finished it eventually with Jerry Lynn hit a sit out power bomb and then a clothesline, which Joey Styles just sold like crazy. He was like, that was really basic, nothing crazy, but boy, did it take him out. And then he just picked him up, did his cradle pile driver for the win. And I thought this was a really good match that highlighted the skills of both gentlemen. And obviously they're pushing Jerry Lynn towards this next showdown again with RBD. So it was pretty apparent that he would go over here. But I thought Tajiri had a great match too. And it was fun.
Yeah, I thought this was a really fun opener, a really hot opener. The crowd was really into it. You were talking about Tajiri's kicks versus Jerry Lynn's fire. Tajiri was doing the hard kicks. Jerry Lynn was selling it, but like, come on, you can hit me harder. And then Tajiri just unloads him with a kick, and Jerry Lynn's out cold. It's like, yeah, that's perfect. We got Tajiri's putting him in the Tree of Woe and then giving him a drop kick, which I really love. And then, yeah, Jerry Lynn coming out of the corner with the running power bomb sit out. Liger bomb, whatever you want to call it, and then the cradle pile driver. I thought the ending maybe was a little quick, a little brief, but everything looked really great. It was really hot. Tajiri was feeling it. Jerry Lynn is getting us over here as we've seen him. So this was a lot of fun and probably one of the best openers we've seen on any of these shows. So that was good. But what did you think, Glenn?
I really liked it. I thought it was really smooth. Like the transitions between the moves, between the different guys' control segments, between the parts of the match, the legwork to begin with, all the transitions between Jerry Lynn's legwork on Tajiri that he countered into his own, into the quick bow and arrow. All of that was really smooth. I loved seeing the tarantula here, because having mostly seen Tajiri in his later WWE career, when he can do the tarantula for 4 seconds at a time because they have the 5 count, I loved seeing it here where nobody cares about counts. You just put it on the guy.
That's true. Yeah, it was much. I forgot about that. But when he transitioned to WWE, it always felt a little weird when he would do the tarantula. He'd have to like hold it on for 5 seconds, let it go, and then try to knock him out with a kick or something. It was very strange. But yeah, good point.
I did think it was a little, I mean, not weird. They're both, like, kind of faces. I mean, Jerry Lynn definitely is. Tajiri is kind of like, I don't know what he is. But for them to kind of do that handshake after, at the end, I mean, not that it's weird. There was no shenanigans in the match why they wouldn't. But to me, like that cradle pile driver is just, like, a devastating move. It's like, so Tajiri takes that move and, like, all right, this move could, like, break your neck and crush your skull. And then, like, a few minutes later, it's like, hey, good match. Like, I don't know. It's like, what is he, like, Sting or something? Like, I mean, it's not comparable. Jerry Lynn didn't, like, use a sledgehammer. Yeah. But I just think it's weird when someone gets, like, completely creamed in a move that should really, like, possibly break their neck if we're supposed to buy it as legitimate, and they're like, hey, great match.
Well, it's ECW. You have extreme finishers that shouldn't be taken as a negative insult, but or whatever you want to call. But next up, we have or did you have any final thoughts there, Glenn? I feel like I cut you off.
No, I'm still wondering if the people in the crowd want a cyber.
Speaking of cyber, out comes Lance Storm in a Chris Jericho Monday Night Jericho t-shirt. And he does a hell of a promo here. I really like this. He basically says that Tommy Dreamer somehow accused him of being on steroids, I guess, because he looks so good, but he says he's the best-built athlete this side of a negative drug test. And he, you know, says that Tommy Dreamer used to be in shape, which he did when ECW first started. So he thinks he's on the juice. So what Lance Storm does is he pulls out a vial and he says that Tommy Dreamer should come down here and pee. And he produces a vial that has his pee in it. And we'll get them both drug tested and see who's on the gas and who's on whatever. And prove a point that Lance Storm's a natural athlete. Tommy Dreamer comes out. Joey Styles is like, you don't have to do this. And he was freaking out, which was hilarious. Comes out with his fanny pack looking like a bum off the street who just got off the bus or something. But he comes out. He attacks Storm, DDTs him, and then pours the pee in his face and walks out. So I wonder, Glenn, what you thought of this.
Well, I think Tommy Dreamer is just deflecting because he knows he couldn't pass that urine test. I think it was a little... strange when Dreamer's coming out and Styles says, you know, he's coming to the ring so he can publicly urinate.
Ridiculous.
I mean, it is ECW. Anything could happen. But Lance Storm challenging Tommy Dreamer to come out to the ring and whip it out is not exactly what I was expecting when I turned on, you know, this happy fun time TV show earlier today. And then, of course, you know, Dreamer beats up Storm and throws his own piss on him. So that's always a satisfying ending to any story.
Mark.
Yeah, I like to think that because Lance Storm is a heel, that the piss that he brought out was not his. It was, you know, someone else's, so that, you know, when he got his comeuppance and got the piss poured on his face, that it was someone else's, which, not that you want any pee on your face, even your own, typically. I don't want to generalize.
Well, if it has to be might. Someone's.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want pee on my face, but if I gotta, it's, you know, better to be my own, I guess. So I like to think that because Lance Storm is a heel, that it wasn't his anyway.
Something I love is that every time fake pee is used on TV or movies or wrestling or whatever fake pee is used on, it's always so yellow, like the person is the most dehydrated person on the planet. Like, have some fucking water.
Well, that's because he's spending all his time training and he's not, you know, hydrating enough. Also, in his promo, before he invited Dreamer to come to the ring and take a piss, he insulted all those pseudo athletes in the back who wrestle in t-shirts, which is basically the entire ECW roster, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, Lance Storm is good. I think this might be my favorite Lance Storm promo I've ever heard. Like, this was pretty good.
I don't know what the others in that field are.
Well, there's Let Me Be Serious for a Moment, and then he does nothing, so I don't think he has much competition, but I thought this was good.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, it was fine for a little segment.
Yeah, good. Yeah, well, this isn't a pay-per-view, so this is basically there. You buy this as a home video, and then they show the highlights on TV. So, you know, you can have segments like this. So, but let's move on. And Glenn, you get to talk about Rod Price versus Nova.
Ooh, do I?
Yeah.
Well, I did notice as this match was beginning, there's a middle-aged dude in the front row of the crowd wearing a straw hat who kind of looks like Terry Funk.
That's the... he's the hat guy, Hawaiian hat guy. I forget what his name is, but he's at every single ECW Arena show.
That's hat guy?
I think so.
Oh, crap! I never saw him before.
Yeah, watch an ECW Arena show, he's always in the same seat right there.
Wow, okay, cool. So, yeah, Rod Price looks kind of... he looks a little too much like a generic big dude for ECW. But I guess, I mean, like you say, it's not a pay-per-view. Maybe we're getting kind of a skewed picture of the day-to-day workings of the company as opposed to, you know, their quarterly pay-per-view offerings. So they're going. Skull von Crash interferes on behalf of Rod Price. Chris Chetty interferes on behalf of Nova. And they generally just brawl a little. Nova and Chetty dive to the outside and then do a double dive off the top rope. And Nova gets the pin. Crush and Price have some infighting afterwards. You know, and this is going on a little bit. And there's two big muscle guys arguing. And they angrily start taking the straps down on their singlets. And it's like, God, guys, just make out already.
Mark, what do you think about the first time we got to see Big Vito on the
footage? I
thought
that's immediately what I thought, and I said, oh my god, it's Big Vito, and then I found out his name was Skull Von Crush, which I think was that like one of the names they wanted to give Steve Austin when he came to WWE. I feel like that's one of the six names that Stone Cold's always like talking about. It's pretty close. It was definitely something Von something. I know that. Yeah, that was cool. I mean, obviously this was pretty much a nothing match. I do remember Rod Price because when I was like 10 or 11 years old, I was a huge fan of Global Wrestling.
There you go. Yeah.
And I couldn't remember at first where it was held, but I remembered. I was like, that was definitely Global. And now I looked him up, and yes, it was definitely Global. He even had a tag team title run with John Tatum.
Wow.
At one point. So I don't know if anybody out there, I know you've watched some Global in your day, Steven.
Not very much. Just Sean Waltman. Matches. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I watched that show because I couldn't believe it was on like ESPN, and I think it was on like every day. So I couldn't believe that I found wrestling at like on this show every day on the ESPN. So I would like come home and watch it. And I think it was at like 3 or 4 o'clock every afternoon. So I was like kind of obsessed with it for a while.
Did you get the bungee jumping match?
I did. I do remember the bungee jumping match. It was Chaz against somebody, and I can't quite remember off the top of my head. There was a guy named Chaz. That was his name.
If I could just interject for 1 second, you're talking about Stone Cold's potential names. The new names that WWF had in a list included Ice Dagger, Fang McFrost, and Otto von Ruthless.
That's the one I was thinking of, Otto von Ruthless.
Do you think he would have been his biggest star if he was Skull McCrush or whatever the hell that was? Skull
McCrush. No, can you imagine?
Like, okay, what was that one?
There's a simple
Frosty
name.
McNeil.
I do this in my head every time someone gets a new name out of the NXT name generator. Imagine Howard Finkel at the main event of WrestleMania announcing the new World Wrestling Federation champion, Fang McFrost. It doesn't work. It doesn't scan. You can't imagine it, but it's dumb.
That's how you know some guys are just not going to make it to the top. You're like, that's with that name, no. Howard Finkel cannot announce that. Exactly. He could. It would be amazing to hear. Exactly.
You know, CM Punk was the world champion for a long time.
I don't think CM Punk is as weird as Otto von Ruthless.
No, for sure.
Otto von Ruthless!
That's so awesome.
I can imagine Fink putting some emphasis in CM Punk! You know, that works.
Okay. Anyway, so this was just an angle that kind of set up the Baldies, which are coming.
ECW.
Yeah, nothing match, just to
set up the what now?
The Baldies. The Baldies are coming, so...
That. The Baldies are coming.
Skull Von Crush and his crew. You'll see.
So he's going to have a stable of bald dudes?
The Baldies.
Okay, I can't wait.
Does Skull Von Crush have anything to do with, wasn't there a skull in the DOA?
No. They might both be Nazis, but that's about it.
Well, so. You never do know.
You never know. But let's move on to the next more interesting match, and probably a good contrast to the first match that you talked about, Mark. Super Crazy and Mosco de la Merced, or El Mosca, I think they call them here.
Yeah, they're like, we're not going to say that whole thing. We're going to call you El Mosca. How about that? He's like, see, está bien. So, yeah, this was another really fun match. They've kind of, so like the last couple shows we saw Super Crazy against Tajiri and always were guaranteed a great match from them. So now they've split them up. They give them good opponents and now we're guaranteed two great matches from them. So I think it's sweet. Mosco's mask is like crazy. He looks like a bird or something. I guess he's probably supposed to be some Aztec god. I'm presuming.
No idea.
Yeah, I'm not expecting answers here, but I'm just kind of pontificating. Yeah, they both do I always kind of say it's a lot of the typical lucha stuff, but I feel like saying something like that discredits the work these guys are doing, because they really, the way these guys do that high flying stuff just looks so, A, amazing athletically, and B, just very believable. Like the way they land is very, very looks hard hitting. It doesn't look like some of these WWE topes that you'll see where the guy nudges him on the temple and they sell it like it's they got into a car accident. So it really is different. And we got a lot of great moves from both these guys. I can't even begin to list them all, but we got the crazy special, which was amazing, all the way like over the guardrail to the outside, and it was just like, I mean, you've seen it before, but it's just like, holy, how does he do that and not die in the process? Mosca really impressed me a lot too. He had a lot of crazy good moves. He did like a springboard Hurricanrana off the top. And then he tried to, I don't know what move he was trying to do, but Super Crazy caught him and like just slammed him into the guardrail, which is really sweet on the outside. He actually did a cool submission move again. Joe Styles didn't help me on this one, so I don't even know what it was called, but I just like that both these guys always kind of worked some cool mat work in amongst all their high-flying stuff. And then he hit a really awesome move that Joey Styles called a 450 splash with a twist, which I think accurately describes it, but that was pretty sweet too. And basically, let's see, how did this all end? I don't really remember. Mosco hit a powerbomb?
It was Super Crazy with a huge ass powerbomb.
And then the Tilt-A-Whirl backbreaker, then the frog splash,
yeah.
So, I mean, obviously they've been pushing Crazy for a while, and I, again, kind of with the first match, I knew Lynn was going to win here. It's always this outsider guy that comes in that we haven't seen before isn't typically the guy to win these matches. So I expected Crazy to go over, and he did, but it's a really good 10-12 minute match. Really an athletic exhibition by both these guys, and the talent that ECW seems to pluck out from Mexico and from Japan. I mean, I don't know if Paul Heyman's just getting lucky with these guys, or he's just a scouting genius or what, because they're really getting some great matches out of this talent they're bringing in. So good stuff.
Yeah. This was just, this was just a spot fest. It escalated a lot. Like, you would have some early dives that were pretty fun, but then by the end, you had friggin' the crazy special and all this stuff. Crazy even friggin' did a moonsault off the guardrail. Like, he was standing on the guardrail and did a moonsault. Like, I know insane is a bad pun, but it is. It's crazy. Like, what the hell? So, this amazing dives in this one. Not much of a story or anything like that, but just a lot of fun. And good kind of change of pace match on the undercard, although not so much on this show because it seems to be a lot of these more spotty fest matches. So, but compared to our normal ECW show, which is like brawl after brawl after brawl, this was very refreshing.
It's amazing how far we've gone into the show without so much as, I mean, they've gone into the crowd with their dives, but there hasn't been any real crowd brawling or anything like that thus far. So it's nice to see.
We'll get to that.
We'll
get there.
But I like that they're waiting a while, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I like Crazy. Mosca's really good, and this was a lot of fun. But any word on this one, Glenn?
I liked a lot of the flippy stalemate spots at the beginning of the match when they got the big Lucha Libre chant from the crowd. Indulge me in a bit of fan sociology here. This is an ECW Internet Wrestling Fan Convention in 1999. So yep. Are these almost like the original arrogant, oh, I get Lucha tapes kind of super fans?
Some of them were for sure. But yeah, I was actually on the internet at this time talking wrestling. So maybe not around this time. And yeah, there was people who were getting tapes from all around the world. And they probably knew a lot about Crazy, and they knew something about Mosca and Tajiri and Taka, who we'll see later, and that kind of stuff. So yeah, probably, you know, not all of them. A lot of them were just ECW fans from around the country that wanted to go to the ECW arena. So
sure. Yeah. I really dug the fans counting along in Spanish for the 10 punch spot in the corner. Yeah. That was cool. And then Joey Styles calling out, you know, thank goodness they all took high school Spanish or whatever. I mean, if they had to count to 11, that might have been a dicey situation. But still, all the individual spots in the match were good. I felt it was a little disjointed, like they kind of went from spot to spot to spot with not much connecting them, really.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I really dug Super Crazy's frog splash, though. He does a good one.
Yeah, I like my Crazy. He, you know, he, as we'll see later, too, he's not afraid to do some of these bloody brawls. So he's a good fit for ECW. I guess we'll move on to the crazy, weird, extreme silence there. So let's move on.
Taking awkward silence to the extreme.
Hardcore silence. So let's go on next match, which is the point, I guess. They've been doing it for a few years where Vince McMahon was giving Paul Heyman money, and occasionally he would just send talent down there that he wasn't using. So we get Poppy Chulo, who the former Mr. Ocula, taking on Taka Michinoku, a rematch from WrestleMania 14. WrestleMania rematch in the ECW arena. Who would have thought? But I've always been a big fan of Taka, and I thought he looked really good here. Just his selling, his bumping, his like begging off. He'd like move out of the way of something and point at his head. Just all the little things he did I thought were really great. He had an amazing tornado DDT. There was this huge somersault plancha over the ring post, which looked great. And, you know, and Papa Chulo, he was bringing some good offense too. So this wasn't a one man show, but Taka was clearly the star. And then if we talk about the finish, Taka Michinoku does the Michinoku driver, but he does it from starting at an inverted suplex. So it looks like super, super vicious, like one of the most vicious, Michinoku drivers I've ever seen. But any thoughts on this one, Glenn?
This was another match, kind of like the Tajiri match earlier. Was really fluid. Like the last match I said was a little disjointed. This one really wasn't. I think they were really flowing well. I love Taka scouting a lot of Chulo's spots and dodging them. I think at one point Joey Styles did Steve Austin's catchphrase on commentary. That kind of threw me off a little bit. I think it's interesting that so far in the CCW show we have three quick high flying matches. So like the first part of the show is really kind of dedicated to that style, whereas we're going to be moving into some of the more typical ECW style after this.
Yeah.
Also, if we're going to have a WrestleMania rematch at the ECW arena, it should have been Warrior versus Savage.
That would have been bizarre.
Although I don't know how that would have been in 99. Good Lord.
Yes.
It would have involved like trapdoors and smoke and stuff like that.
Talk about people who don't want to answer Lance Storm's challenge to go to the ring and piss in a cup.
Oh, gosh.
I won't take your pee test, Lance Storm.
God, why do we never get that promo? That could have been if everybody around at this time was just merged into ECW all at once.
Oh God.
That could be some great fantasy booking. We could probably do a whole show just fantasy booking at that, but we've already inserted too many random shows, so we probably have to get back.
Yep. Let's add another show. We'll never do Hardcore Heavens.
any more thoughts on this match, Glenn?
No, I really dug it. The Michinoku driver for the win. He hit really well. That's about it for me. It was another match in this style, but I'm kind of digging it.
Yeah, how'd you like Taka versus Papa Chulo, Mark?
I thought it was pretty good. It was pretty enjoyable. It did seem like a little more of a highlight for Taka, I should say. And I liked the new attitude Taka that they were putting over that Styles like mentioned like 15 times because he the cocky new Taka. So and he just kind of did a little more showboating and looked a little more confident, had some more emotion and like more kind of character that I've never really seen out of him. He'd just been like kind of a cool wrestler who was very bland before. So I like the fact that they're trying to give him a little bit of tude here as well. And I think the only problem is that kind of at this point when we just saw Moscow versus Super Crazy, like the fans are kind of like whatever for a lot of these dives and spots that they're doing because we literally just saw two guys who are probably a little better than both these guys, or right, you know, maybe not Taka, but at least on the same level doing some crazier stuff. So that's what would be my only complaint, but that's not really a complaint about the work of the guys involved. It's just kind of how the card is structured. But ECW.
Yeah, it seems like Caveman has an issue with structure of the series of matches.
That's probably his biggest flaw more than anything else, if I had to make one huge criticism. Oh, and up paying people.
Yeah, let's say. But let's do one more match before the break here. Maybe two. We'll see how this goes. But Glenn, we have Rob Van Dam defending the World Television Championship against Too Cold Scorpio. Who another guy from WWE on loan, I guess. So.
Yeah, we sure do. We have another welcome back chant, welcoming Flash Funk back to the ECW arena. but after that, I mean, this crowd got to realize a little bit about logic. I mean, don't chant whole fucking show for RVD when you were just chanting new fucking show for Jerry Lynn not half an hour ago.
It's you know, they're a fickle bunch.
Yeah, sure. So we've got Flash Funk on this show. We've got Taka. We've got Aguila. We've got someone else in another match later on. This is kind of the underutilized in the WWF show, as opposed to the underutilized in WCW phase that ECW went through in the mid 90s.
I think ECW. Was really good at using WWE guys when they're not using them in these roles, especially like someone like Scorpio here, who was the TV champion and the tag team champion at the same time and probably was the wrestler of the year in 96 with the TV title. So,
well, we might see about that with the 96 year interview that we're also going to do before Hardcore Heaven. the match begins with some chain wrestling that RVD is not entirely comfortable with. He's kind of trying to grope around for holds and to try to break holds. I don't know if that's just his portrayal of his character not being like comfortable with that style and wanting to get into the dives and flips and splits and stuff, or if that's just his development as a wrestler. That's not really something that he's put the emphasis on in training or whatever. But either way, that was a big part of that early part of the match before he tossed Flash Funk over the rail, jumped off the rope onto him in the crowd. So far in the show, we've had a few spots going off into the crowd. There was one in the Tajiri match where he pulled the rail like all the way to the ring apron, just about. And they're all doing them in the same place. So it's all the people in the crowd in this one spot right in front of the ring across from the far camera that just have to move out of the way in like every other match.
Maybe they didn't pay for their seats.
yeah, exactly. Well, that's, you know, right in back of the camera, right in the front row. That's where, in the modern day, WWE puts the celebrities that come to the show. Got some, like, obviously and gleefully unprotected chair shots to RVD from Funk. He dropped the leg on the chair on the head, and then Sabu came out still with the tape on his chinny chin chin, still like looking like a maniac for even trying to do anything when he apparently still has a broken jaw or whatever. And he splashes Funk through the table. Bill Alfonso starts yelling at him for coming out with it when his chin is still injured. but that's able to give RVD the win with his own frog splash. So hooray for them.
Yeah, Mark.
Yeah, this was a really good match between these two. I mean, I would say until the finish, but it's ECW. I expect something crazy to happen eventually, and you know, they're not going to have RVD lose. So if they're going to, you know, before this big match with Jerry Lynn coming up, so if they're going to, you know, they still want to keep Scorpio looking strong here, and then this is a good way to finish it. This one was actually much more egregious of the handshake afterwards than the original. My original criticism of Tajiri, because this is where Sabu actually comes in, drives him through a table, and then Bill Alfonso pushes him off the ropes and, you know, sets him up for the Van Damminator, and then he's like, all right, well, good match. He did a good job. I'm like, all right, well, that's a little more like, that's very Sting at WrestleMania-esque, because that's just like, I mean, I guess we got to still shrug and say ECW, but.
What I was thinking was like, Scorpio used to do this shit himself all the time when he was the TV champion. So it's kind of like, well, you know, you did what you have to do to keep
the
title.
Did he have guys interfering on his behalf?
He cheated a lot and he showboated a lot, and he was kind of the prototypical.
So he was like more of a heel in early ECW.
Oh yeah, he was basically what Rob Van Dam was doing, where he showboated a lot. He'd pick him up after a big move, and you know, he was the TV champion and the tag champion at the same time. So like Rob Van Dam's kind of like the second coming of Too Cold Scorpio, kind of putting on the best match on the show. Well, you know, he's not as good, but
I gotta find some of that stuff, because I've only seen him in WCW and ECW, WWF. I've never seen him work heel, so I'm actually I gotta find some of that stuff.
Yeah, when we get to our 96 and 95 stuff, you'll be seeing a lot of
when we confuse everybody by going back in time.
Yeah, there's two of the best ECW matches in history were Too Cold Scorpio in early 96, one night against Sabu, and the next night against Shane Douglas. So we'll get to that. But any more thoughts on this match, Mark?
No, I think we covered everything. I thought it was good. 3.5 stars if I was a rating kind of guy.
Yeah, I think this is one of the better Rob Van Dam matches we get. And I guess a lot of that is because of the story of Too Cold Scorpio kind of still wrestling like he was the TV champion a little bit. He was kind of showboating and doing all that fun stuff he did. And I think the pacing on this was a lot better. That didn't make it – like there was a lot of cool moves. There was a lot of cool dives and stuff like the earlier matches. But I think the pacing that kind of Too Cold Scorpio brought into this made it not feel like a spot fest like those earlier matches. But – you know, and Sabu looked really gross with the blood dribbling out of his chin and out of the tape.
Ugh,
but yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, hopefully Sabu can take a break or something and get his chin fixed. But we might never see that.
He's extreme.
He is extreme.
Extreme inability to receive healthcare.
Before Mark talks about the next match, which is Chris Candido versus Taz for the ECW World title, Glenn, why don't you talk about the Steve Corino promo?
Yes, this is something else that we had to go to the TV for. Corino is in the ring, and he is sure, absolutely certain, that he has the ability to choke out Taz. which brings on the huge Taz is gonna kill you chant from the internet faithful.
Yeah.
so Corino absolutely would choke out Taz, absolutely would win the world title from him, but he was doing some weightlifting, doing some training earlier today. He had 480 pounds up on the weight bench, and this is a direct quote. broke my appendix. Now, break is usually not the word that people use when they're talking about an appendix.
Can you break your appendix by lifting weights?
Well, I mean, people say they burst their appendix, and I guess that's a form of breakage. So it's the sort of thing like when someone gets an idiom wrong, but by using a metonym, but it's not so wrong that you can't still like muscle it into something that is technically right, you know?
I thought it was Carino just being a moron lying off his ass to try to get out of the situation that he got himself in.
Oh, well, sure, of course. I'm sure his appendix is fine, or maybe he doesn't even have it. Maybe the lies go all the way down. How deep does the rabbit hole go? The truth is out there, Steven.
It is.
So Carino, sadly, can't kick Taz's ass right this moment. One thing I noticed in this segment, Taz, as we know, is not a big person. He's built, but he's not big. And Steve Carino here is actually taller than Taz, but standing next to him, he just looks like a scrawny little boy.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like he's about 12.
Yeah, and I think this is a fun way. I'm not sure if this was the first instance, but this is a long-going situation where Steve Carino and Taz have this kind of feud, kind of not feud, where Carino kind of like keeps insulting him and Taz keeps going like, I'm going to kill you, but Carino kind of gets away or whatever.
This time, obviously, he gets away by introducing the suitable substitute, someone else to chant welcome back to. It's Chris Candido with of course, Sonny.
Who is drunk off her ass. But
she looks like a drunk sorority girl, like also ready for a sleepover. A sexy sleepover.
Yeah, sure.
What a sexy one.
What did you think of this FTW Rules Falls Count Anywhere ECW World title match?
It was a good little match. I think it was actually better than before the match, I want to mention Candido's it was like a shoot promo, I guess, because didn't he have like drug problems or something, or painkiller? And he's saying he didn't tap out to painkillers or alcohol, so he's not going to tap out to Taz. So I don't know if that's a perfect analogy, but you know, again,
it's also a little painful to hear now.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because he did tap out.
That was a staph infection. He got himself back. Yeah, he actually got himself cleaned up and then got a staph infection and died. So
Well, damn. That's kind of an Eddie Guerrero thing then, right?
Same type of situation. He was on the comeback. He was doing IWA Mid-South shows. So he was
Essentially died of you know, complications he had done, whereas this sounds like it's maybe unrelated.
Yeah, true.
Maybe not. Like staph infections, I don't know if you've done a million drugs before that you might be
probably doesn't help.
So. I don't know, there might be some complications with your immune system at that point. I don't know,
Doc. I just want to mention I did do several kilos of cocaine last year, so it's been a few months, but
didn't tap out.
That's all you need to know.
Oh, this has gone in a weird direction. The match.
Sorry. Our condolences to the family and friends of Chris Candido. We are fans.
Yes, we are, actually. And but this is a pretty good Candido match. A pretty good display of what he can do. I like, it's kind of they actually finally go to the crowd, which actually I got to say this is one of like the cooler crowd brawls of one of my complaints is usually they go too long. This wasn't too long. I think they were just out there for like 2 or 3 minutes. And there was like some one spot he like sunset flipped Candido like on the bleachers that looked like really painful. And Candido ran up and kind of did like an elbow drop in the back or towards the back of the crowd. And I don't know. I just thought like considering we'd seen so much in ring, and this is where the formatting can really be effective if you space things out the right way. We'd seen so much in the ring action that like, you know, a little brawl in the crowd actually felt like a change of pace, which is crazy to say for ECW. So I actually did. That stuff usually annoys me, but I guess just the way it was done, how minimal it was, you know, I actually thought it was fine in the context of this match. And then they go back into the ring, and, you know, Taz pretty much. I do got to say another thing about Candido. He does a mean vertical suplex, hanging vertical suplex. So he holds that thing for, I don't know, a good amount of time.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty good. But, yeah, eventually Taz takes over and, you know, hits a bunch of suplexes. He's got Candido in the Kata Hajime, and then suplexes him with, I guess, while he's doing it. He's like, screw this, and just suplexes him through this table. And
Tazmission Tazplex.
Yeah, Tazmission Tazplex. Yeah, because Joey at this point had named like 15 different kinds of Tazplex, like a head and arm Tazplex, a Tootsie Two Tazplex, and like 15 other ones. So this is the Tazmission Tazplex now.
Wait, did you just say the Tootie Fruity Tazplex?
One of those I made up. I'm not going to say which one.
One of these sentences is a lie.
Exactly. So then suddenly, I don't know, it's kind of weird because it's not like we haven't seen this before. Like, I think this is the move that finished the last match with Sabu on the last show. But they suddenly go into super shoot mode, and they say, I guess because Candido had already maybe broken his neck once earlier, so maybe that's why, and kind of ties back to him being shooty in the beginning. But they say, okay, this is, they kind of do, Joey Styles doesn't say it, but he kind of does that thing where, you know, where JR and King, or not the JR's around, but they used to do this when they would do that fake shoot thing in WWE, where they get all serious and suddenly they're not calling, they're just talking kind of more slowly, like, and then Joey kind of says, you know, I've had differences with Chris Candido as a man, as a human being, but nobody wanted to see this. And he gets really, like, you know, like almost like this other stuff isn't real. They don't go that far with it, but almost like, you know, whatever differences we had. And he said, I love this phrase they always use, it's been well documented. Like someone is out there writing, actually literally documenting all the times they've had differences. Anyway,
and well, so there is an ECW magazine by this time.
All right. So I guess it is actually documented somewhere. So. Fair enough. But and then they get, you know, keeping with the tone, they ring the bell, they just end the match, there's no pin or anything, they put him on the stretcher, they bring out the doctors, the whole thing, super shooty, you're like, okay, and part of me is even like, is this real? Like, I know it's not, but, you know, sometimes you're not totally sure. And but then Taz comes in and just starts beating the crap out of him on the stretcher, tosses Candido off the stretcher, throws him in the ring, and Styles is now just appalled at what Taz is doing, which is just pretty damn heelish. I mean, it doesn't really get much more healing.
We talked about this last time. Is Taz a heel in 99 or not?
Yeah, it's really confusing because he's the face. He's presented as the face in the context of the matches, but he's just a piece of shit asshole. I mean, terrible person.
He's a face when he's about to kill Steve Corino. Yes. And then, you know, Candido comes out and he's still a dick and everyone remembers he's a dick, but then he gets his neck broken, and I felt the same way, Mark. I wasn't sure if that was an actual injury because I know he had at least the one injury, maybe several, I don't remember, but then Taz pulls him off the stretcher and puts him in the Kata Hajime again just to be a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to see him with that neck brace on and then get into the Kata Hajime, it was just like, damn. Even for me, I was like, that's too far, man. That's too extreme.
Well, if we ever get to the next pay-per-view, we'll see if Chris Candido can get his revenge. But at this rate, we don't know. any final thoughts, Glenn?
The segment with the cinder block wall when they were brawling out through the crowd, I thought was a step above some of the usual brawling through the crowd bits, which any listener to this program will know is, if not one of my pet peeves, one of my pet annoyances. But the T-Bone Tazplex, for another custom name, against the cinder block wall was pretty nice. Candido jumped up there, did an elbow drop off of it onto the floor. Then one thing that I liked from this crowd, after they were finished brawling way out there where there wasn't even a crowd, they went through and past the crowd. When they went back through the crowd and got back to the ring, they did the welcome back chant again.
That's ridiculous.
So that I thought was really cool. And the belly to back Tazmission Tazplex was a neat spot, and yeah, I guess he didn't want to let Candido survive.
Yeah, Yeah, it's if he lets him, and he didn't want to let him this time.
What do you say? That's what happens when you don't survive, and then throws the mic down.
Like so, wow. Something like that. Yeah, this was interesting. This was very.
He does usually let them survive.
Yeah.
In the end, because he lets them.
I guess Candido pissed him off too much.
I guess so. That whole not tapping out thing really got him going.
Yeah, it's interesting portrayal of Taz at this time. Like, he is obviously the biggest star in the company and the number one babyface, but maybe you have to be a heel to be a babyface in ECW.
Yeah, they were smarky 20 years before everyone else, basically.
Yeah.
Where now we won't actually cheer somebody until they're a heel, and then they'll turn face because we cheered them because they're a heel.
It's not like Steve Austin was such a nice guy at this time.
Yeah, maybe it's like the beginnings of the catch-22 that WWE is in now, where someone's a heel and the crowd likes them because they're doing these evil things, and so they cheer them. But anyone they try to push as a babyface, the crowd just thinks is obnoxious.
Yeah, but you know, we'll see how this Taz thing goes. We got a few more shows with him as champ. So,
can you imagine Taz in the New Day?
Oh my gosh.
Because Glenn's comment made me think of the New Day, and then I suddenly shifted to thinking of Taz.
I can't imagine Taz dancing.
That's what I'm wanting to imagine.
I'm trying to imagine Taz dancing along to the trombone music, but my response can't really be seen on a podcast because I'm just kind of stunned and blinking.
You know, if they did want to do, I mean, they did it with the Dudleys. If they did want to do like a, hey, Taz is back for 1 minute, you know, to do something, they could, you know, I could totally see him jumping and, you know, tapping out Xavier Woods and him just doing this insane face while he taps out. And that could actually, I would enjoy that. And I wouldn't want to see more than that, but, you know, that one moment could be fun.
Yeah, I don't think he could do more than that.
No.
I mean, as his last five matches, whenever WWE.
And I
want to
hear him say
cast.
Cole one more time.
Cole! Big ups.
Big ups.
Big ups, Cole. Here comes Roman Reigns.
What a fascinating person Taz is. Like
Dolph Ziggler.
Like, how could he be that color commentator?
I don't know about this Rusev guy.
How could he be that guy?
I really want to see Taz on commentary now that we're doing this.
Yeah. But like, yeah, look what he was in 99. And look what he was as a color commentator. It's so bizarre.
He's not even the same guy. I mean... Yes. Did they just tell him to be just a cheesy idiot? Like, was that basically what happened? Or did he devolve completely?
I don't know. Or was he always a cheesy idiot and somehow knew
and
how
he was
to...
a great actor acting like this badass. He actually doesn't curse at all in real life.
Yeah.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah. But let's move on.
The way to find out is to try to land an interview with him. So maybe
with Taz, yeah.
That would be our crowning moment.
Where have I heard that idea?
We can... You know, give out some Taz bucks to him or something.
Sorry, Taz, we can't give you money, but we do have these Taz bucks.
I will volunteer to Tazmit.
Oh. What's this podcast called? Is it called the Tazcast?
It should be if it's not.
Anyways, like, lame jokes aside. We got the franchise, Shane Douglas.
Called the Human Podcast Machine with Taz. That's kind of cool.
That's good. That's good. So the franchise, Shane Douglas with Francine versus Just Incredible with Jason and Jazz, who's not yet named. Shane Douglas cuts a promo where he says fuck a lot, which my wife did not like, and made her leave the room. So there's that. She's like, he's saying fuck too much. I'm like, yep, he is.
Rough night at home for Steven. Thanks, Taz.
How much is too much, really?
Well, when you can't hear any other words because it's every other word. Like, I don't know if it would have been sentences without it. It was weird. Anyways, it's Shane Douglas. So it seemed like a nice little fired up promo before. Basically, the story is Shane Douglas is the franchise. Just Incredible wants to be the franchise because Shane Douglas is old and should be leaving, but Shane Douglas is not ready to leave yet, which I don't know if he signed his WCW contract and was just waiting for it to start, and it was like a pretty accurate story. But I thought this was a surprisingly good match. Just Incredible has not been very impressive. Shane Douglas has gotten old and really gassed up, so he hasn't looked good in a while, but He had great fire at the start. He had these really cool suplexes. And then Justin Credible brought Shane Douglas was really pissed off. He kept coming right at him until Justin Credible got advantage and was like dribbling his head along the mat like it was a basketball, and then ran him into the pole to bust him open. And Shane Douglas sucked, bled quite a lot. He made a really good comeback and using the table at some point. And you know, it kind of devolved when the women came in and they had a cat fight, and then Lance Storm came out, and you had Tommy Dreamer come out, and you had a cool little dueling cane part that was nice between I think it was Shane and Justin Credible. But I think the whole like situation here, the crowd was into it. It looked really cool. You had a Shane Douglas picking up the surprise win at the end, which you always think Justin Credible wins these things by all the running in people. So that looked cool. And I enjoyed this whole thing way more than I ever thought I would. But what do you think, Glenn?
Actually, going back to Shane Douglas's promo for 1 second, I just looked at my notes for this match, and the first one is, ooh, Douglas is edgy because he swears a lot.
Told you.
So 3 or 4 hours ago when I was watching this, I was kind of with your wife. I didn't leave the room, but, you know, I suppose. See, I swear a lot in life and love as well as on podcasts, but there's a purpose. It can't replace other language. It has to add to it, and boy, can it. Anywho, I think Shane Douglas is a little weird as a face. Yeah. This goes back a little bit to the way that this stuff maybe works in ECW and is getting to work in the Attitude Era in general, I suppose, in that he didn't change anything about himself. So he is still arrogant. I mean, the whole franchise gimmick is about arrogance and Douglas just being full of himself, and he's still got
Rick Martel's cologne.
That. Yes, precisely. I think that's what Francine is wearing. And he's still got all of that. If Jake Roberts was on this pay-per-view instead of the 97 one, he'd be spraying it in his face. And even at the end of the match, Jason comes in with his fractured neck and his neck brace, and Shane Douglas drops him with a full Nelson bomb. I mean, he may be a face, but he's still a jerk.
Oh, yeah.
He even says, that's the old franchise, the old Shane Douglas. Like, I guess that's how you become the big faces in ECW. Just hurt guys with hurt necks.
Vintage Shane Douglas, even.
Well, that's what he did to Pitbull number one. He broke his neck. And then he came up with one of those halo things, you know, connected everywhere. Mm. And then he swung him around, which was like something very heated at the moment. So.
Oh, God. Yeah. So zooming out to the story level for a second, Justin Credible wants to be the new franchise, thinks he is the new franchise. Jerry Lynn is the new fucking show. This is getting perilously close to an old idea I had when I was kicking around dumb ideas and doing random fantasy booking stuff on a blog a long time ago, where one of the things that I wanted to do was take the Undertaker gimmick and make it a title that would be passed by pinfall loss. And again, I was thinking of the
King. The old king.
Like the old king, exactly. Like the King Jim Duggan and King Haku and all that.
King the Savage. King,
yes.
Macho King.
Yeah, yes, yes, precisely. And I put it to the Howard Finkel test. And I produced in my head, here is your winner and the new Undertaker, Kofi Kingston.
Oh my God.
And in ECW here, we see that these gimmicks are getting just a little bit fungible and a little bit malleable.
Justin Credible does have the Sandman's cane after he ran him out of the company.
Well, that is following up from the totemic object analysis that I did on whatever that pay-per-view was. Was that November to Remember? I don't remember November to Remember.
Extreme totemic analysis.
That was the show that that was the show that got us kicked off the Pro Wrestling Super Show and into our own place. I think that one was way kicked too far off. Right there.
It was just too extreme.
Hard,
we had too much extreme tangents.
Hardcore narrative theory.
Mark, what did you think of this?
Yeah, do you want to talk about the actual match a little? Because I punted on that one.
Oh, it's I don't love either of these guys. At least I haven't. Actually, but I should take that back. Because I guess I just say, coming into these last few shows, I didn't love either of these guys, but Incredible has impressed me the last few last few months, and I do actually enjoy Shane Douglas a lot more as a face than A, as a heel, and B, than I thought I would. So that's something to say. And they worked this match pretty stiffly. I mean, you really did feel the hate, like how Shane Douglas just kind of goes to town on him in the beginning there, with just breaking out suplexes and rolling verticals and gourd busters. I mean, he's just kicking his ass, and he really shows the intensity, which I guess he's always done, but it's really fun to see it from like the babyface side of him trying to, or at least as much of a babyface as Shane Douglas asshole can be. I guess if you're against Just Incredible, you're always going to be the babyface in that situation. And then, at some point he blades, and it's a pretty impressive blade job. I don't think we've even seen blood yet tonight. So again, it's nicer when they're spacing stuff out than when you see blood in every match. And you really felt the hate in this one. So, and I also like that we got a Fez press, which is always nice to see in the middle of a hate-filled brawl. So,
well, you notice we saw a stunner as well. So I think Steve Austin's popularity is spilling out everywhere.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
And we get some interference, like you said. Jazz comes in, Francine comes in, and we get the standard cat fight that we're obligated to get whenever there's two women at ringside in ECW. And eventually Douglas hits the Plattsburgh plunge for the win, which that did surprise me a little, just because they've been pushing Credible to the moon. So I just I thought it was pretty well known that Douglas was on his way out, so I was surprised to see him get the win. But clearly they're going to keep this feud going a little longer, as we saw with the post-match attack with the Canes. So whatever. Actually, I thought it was maybe one of the best Shane Douglas matches I've seen. Is that too extreme?
Not for the pay-per-views.
For what really. We've watched.
Yeah. Yeah. But, we have a main event to talk about.
Which
now.
Which is weird, because I didn't think I loved it until I started talking about it. I guess I just liked it a lot better than I thought I would like a match between these two. So.
Oh, yeah. I didn't expect much from these two at this time in their careers. But yeah, the hate really shone through. The blood really helped, and I thought Shane Douglas was a really good fired up babyface. So fun stuff. But we have a main event.
Was this the only time he was ever a babyface besides whatever the Surfer Dude tag team was?
Well, he had all for WCW.
He had the Steamboat too.
Yeah, and his early WWE run in 91, where like when Shawn Michaels was injured and it was Marty Jannetty and Shane Douglas as the Rockers. But I don't know if it ever made tape, but he filled it on house shows.
Oh, wasn't that a time to be alive?
It was. Yeah, he was in the 91 Rumble, so you can check that out.
In the 92 Rumble. He had a shot for the WWF title.
Oh, fucking hell. But yeah, let's talk about this main event, Glenn. We have the
Imagine
Dudleys.
If Shane Douglas. No, we're not going to fantasy book that.
No, let's not fantasy book Shane Douglas as the WWF champion in 92.
No, because I'm not done fantasy booking Kofi Kingston as the Undertaker. I mean, you imagine this: the lights go out, the bell hits, bong.
SOS.
Hold on. Bong. Bong.
Instead of a casket, he uses a bobsled.
Bong. SOS. And he comes out. He's got the hat. He's got the trench coat. He's looking down.
Is he dancing like while in that?
No. He is stalking down.
Is he giving himself high fives?
He's stalking down the aisle. He gets to the stairs. He goes up the stairs. He raises his arms. The lights come back on. He takes off the hat, and it's Kofi Kingston.
His finisher is Trouble at the Morgue.
He can summon lightning now. He can summon druids now. He has all the powers. Sometimes he has Paul Bearer. He has all the powers of the Undertaker. He has
and the powers of Jamaica.
He has the powers of the Urn.
Is every match a Undertaker title defense, or is this kind of a once a year thing? How does this work?
I would imagine it just like a title. Where
this is a non-Undertaker match.
Exactly. A champion.
The Undertaker.
A champion sometimes has non-title matches, but you got to defend the title every 30 days, Jack.
However, because this was a non-Undertaker title match, still the Undertaker, Kofi Kingston.
Precisely. And now the Undertaker dances around and gives himself high five.
Also, the Undertaker has to take Kofi Kingston's gimmick.
You have to get the old guy's gimmick. That's great.
He lost his gimmick.
Mark Calloway from Jamaica, man.
Undertaker lost his gimmick. What's he gonna do now?
Gonna smoke weed on the beach.
You know, he's gonna smoke weeds. He does not get dreads because in my wrestling federation, white guys don't have dreads. But he smokes weed. He eats jerk chicken. He, I don't know, whatever.
Fucking hell. Oh my gosh.
Were we still talking about ECW?
We have one more match.
So we have more time for insane tangents.
Okay. Yeah, we barely even saw this match.
Oh man, that's the Undertaker title. This needs to be revisited.
Oh, this was bizarre. Okay.
Well, why is it that the best parts of our ECW podcast are when we're talking about the Undertaker?
That's true.
He's extreme.
He's super extreme.
Extreme dead man.
Super extreme.
So, the main event of this show does not have the Undertaker or anyone who is presently the Undertaker. We have the Dudley Boys, and they call him Mr. Mustafa. Against Axel Rotten, Balls Mahoney, the Dudley Boys come out and say basically that New Jack wussed out, and he didn't want to come to their Ultimate Jeopardy match, which to my great disappointment did not feature Alex Trebek in any capacity, but is instead apparently a one ring War Games.
Yeah, it was a War Games.
They had the staggered entrances. The heels won the coin toss. Apparently that's what it is. So in the segment of the match that we saw on the main file that we had, it cut off right after Axel Rotten came in. But starts off with Balls versus Devon. He tries to pin Devon right before Bubba comes in like a boob, because you're not going to win War Games until everyone's in the match. But Bubba comes in. That's when I figured out that it was War Games. I'm not a WCW guy. I've only seen a couple of War Games matches, but you know, I've been in internet communities long enough to know what it is. There's a miscue, and Bubba hits Devon with the trash can lid, which gets one of my preferred chants, the kayfabe you fucked up chant.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. If you're going to do it when it's, you know, really fucked up, you got to do it when it's fake fucked up too, right?
Exactly. That's my favorite version of the you fucked up chant. It's everyone's going along with the story of the match, and they still get to chant you fucked up. Nobody made any real-life mistake. They made a kayfabe mistake. Axel Rotten comes in, and our feed cuts off, and then we go to the TV show Joint in Progress.
That's all I've seen, so this is going to be all new to me. It's going to be like I'm a listener now.
Oh, well, we come back, and Axel drops thumbtacks. They do a DDT spot with Devon. These thumbtack spots always look grim, except in TNA for some reason. Also, by the time we cut to it on TV, New Jack is there. apparently he didn't wuss out after all. New Jack dives off the top of the cage onto Mustafa through a table, which in terms of sheer height might be one of his tamer jumps, but jumping off the top of the cage is always badass. I don't care who we are. And yeah, he crushes Mustafa through the table, gets his revenge. Hooray.
Yeah, Dudley's won with the 3D at some point in that mess.
Oh, I totally missed that.
Oh, the Dudley's won.
Yeah. Of course they won. I think they won before.
I had no idea.
I think the clip we saw on TV was post-match.
Okay, I guess that makes sense because the Dudleys were on their way out of the cage at that point.
Yeah. So,
okay. Well, okay then. I'll take your word for it.
Anticlimactic ending to a really fun show. I think this was bizarre. It was just, it was a 15-minute match that we saw about 4 or 5 minutes of. So, I don't know if all the thumbtacks and wild brawling would have made this better, but it would have been a show that this would have been the only really wild, crazy brawl with weapons match on the show. So it might have felt a little more fresh, but it's hard to judge based on what we saw. But do you have any thoughts on this at all, Mark?
Not really.
Fair enough.
It looked like it might have become a cool match, and then from the sounds of it, it got pretty fun towards the end, the part I didn't see. These are guys I do enjoy a lot of their brawls. I think they actually do interesting stuff, and I've become more of a New Jack fan recently. Even just watching some of his promos from
Smoky Mountain.
Yeah, he was actually like a good promo, and he's a garbage wrestler in theory, but he's entertaining. I didn't see any of New Jack in my match because my match cut off after 10 minutes.
That must be a real trip. I got to look up some of that Smoky Mountain stuff because it must be interesting to see New Jack before the world beat him down so much.
Oh, it was heated.
He's still a very angry man, but that's what makes his promos so great though, because he comes across as like angry, but they're really good promos too. They're kind of like thoughtful, so he's not just like a generic angry black man, he's like an angry black man who put a lot of thought into why he's angry. So
that is very good to hear, because in a Jim Cornette promotion you might expect something a little more uncomfortable.
It got uncomfortable. Yeah.
And then there's one promo where he's saying all, or that actually comes up because Cornette comes. I think I even talked about this on the last vault, but Cornette tries to recruit the gangsters, and that's what inspires New Jack to go on this rant about how he doesn't need the white man to make money off him and all this stuff. He's like, well, and Cornette's like, I hear what you're saying. You're totally right, but I can manage your career. I know wrestling. You guys are talented, but I know how to, maneuver around this stuff. I know how to get you to the top. It's just like, it's a really good back and forth between both of them too. It's like a 4 or 5 minute promo. Like, I highly recommend looking it up.
Cool.
Yeah. It's some good stuff. The gangsters, they were definitely a lot more, there was a lot of heat in that situation. There was a lot of race stuff going on too at the time. It was in the South too,
Right.
So you can imagine. I think
it was in the South, and there's a black tag team called the Gangsters.
Yeah, and they win the tag titles, and they show a video of them celebrating in the hood
with
other black people. So, there is that. But that's the end of Cyber Slam. Before we get before we get to our awards, what did you think of the show overall, Mark?
I thought it was a pretty good show. I think it helps that it was 2 hours, because to me, 2 hours is like a really perfect length to like never really have time to even get bored with something. So I didn't. So it was good. Every match was pretty. I mean, the only match that was a total dud was that Nova Rod Price match. But I mean, we're going to see the Baldies out of it. So yippee-ki-yay. And I think I pretty much enjoyed every match I saw. I mean, no complaints. So I would give it a thumbs up. So you can talk to Steven about tracking it down.
Mark or Glenn, sorry.
Well, Steven, I actually thought it was a pretty decent show. I don't know if you heard me last time I said, no, I'm sorry.
No, I didn't.
Well, Steven, I actually thought it was a pretty decent Owen. no, I, like all these shows, they get better in the discussion. on here than they have more enjoyment doing this than I do actually watching the show. But it's still it was still a pretty good show for what it was. I liked the contrast between all the somewhat more contained high flying matches in the beginning before some of the more typical ECW style brawls toward the end. It might actually be an advantage to not have all of the main event, because I might have gotten burned out on that. Although it would have fulfilled, they had the ring apron on one side, was a big logo that said Blood and Guts. And that main event, I think, would be the only match that would have a ton of blood and guts. So maybe for once they were actually saving it for the match that would really take advantage of it. So maybe it's a detriment we didn't get all of that, but I think I might have gotten burned out on it anyway. I thought it was a pretty decent show. I'm always looking forward to the Tajiri matches here, and Jerry Lynn now. I'm becoming more of a Jerry Lynn fan through these, seeing his chronology here.
Awesome. And I know this wasn't a pay-per-view for ECW, but you watched the April ECW or WCW and WWF pay-per-view. So how does this compare to those?
Yes, I did. I watched Spring Stampede, which was crap, which had a match between Hack and Bam Bam Bigelow, because you get the dudes from ECW and then just have them fight each other, in which it was observed that they pulled a table out from under the stagecoach in the Spring Stampede set. I have seen a ton of hardcore garbage brawls between WWFE from the last 15 years, these ECW shows, but the ones I've seen watching these 98-99 WCW shows are just the dirt worst. other than that one 98 show that had Raven versus DDP, that one was kind of cool.
Yeah. Spring Stampede, I'm looking at now, I vaguely remember this, but I remember Hoovy versus Blitzkrieg being really good.
Yeah, it was all right.
And I remember the main event being surprisingly decent for who was involved.
The main event, I wasn't interested at all by the time it came up. That four-way match with, oh God, who was it? Flair and Hogan.
DDP and Sting. Randy Savage, yeah, as the referee.
With Randy Savage as the referee and not facing anyone in ECW.
Yeah, that's a shame.
This is 1999, and Hogan is selling his knee, goes out of the match, and Mike Tenay drops a reference to Joe Theismann getting his leg broken, which was, what, like 87?
You know what's great? I'm looking at this on Wikipedia. They claim that the tagline for Spring Stampede 1999 was "The good, the bad, the showdown. It's a four-way free-for-all with Flair's belt on the line." That's just too many words.
Does that even fit on a poster?
That's ridiculous. But what about Backlash?
They had Backlash in your house, and so just run down, looking up the card. Okay, they had Bradshaw, Farouk, and Midian versus Edge, Christian, and Gangrel, which was not much. Al Snow versus Hardcore Holly in a hardcore match where Holly literally grabbed a kitchen sink and threw it at Snow, so that was something. The Godfather, Intercontinental Champion, versus Goldust with the Blue Meanie, who I don't know which one in these April shows is a more random person to show up in one of the big federations. There's the Blue Meanie in WWF and Mikey Whipwreck in WCW.
Too bad we didn't get Sid in ECW. That would have completed it.
Oh, well, hopefully. Well, hopefully that's coming in the next show. They had number one contender tag match, New Age Outlaws versus Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett. I am constitutionally incapable of being interested in a Jeff Jarrett match. Mankind versus The Big Show in a boiler room brawl, which was complete garbage. They had a snippet of video afterward where Mankind took the camera through the room where they did the Boiler Room Brawl and pointed out all the places that Big Show threw him up against a folded table, and he pointed out all the puddles of blood that he bled. That was 100% better than the actual match. Big Show threw me against this table, and I've got kids.
What the fuck?
So bizarre. I don't know what voice that was. I'm sorry. I'll never do it again. But that little video bit was 100% better than the actual match. Triple H versus X-Pac was fine. Not much. Undertaker versus Ken Shamrock was actually not shit. So that was better than I was expecting. They did some leg work that I thought was pretty neat.
Was that match for the Undertaker title?
Sadly, no. I mean, he won anyway. But
it could have been. They didn't announce it.
Yeah, but man, you can you imagine? Here's your winner and the new Undertaker, Ken Shamrock. Like, his magical powers are summoning lightning, summoning druids, and bleeding from his mouth. And in the main event, you have Stone Cold versus The Rock in a rematch that I expected that I wouldn't like, because it was a rematch of their WrestleMania 15 match that I don't particularly care for.
It's better.
But it is. It totally is. The stuff outside of the ring, I thought, worked a lot better than the WrestleMania match. It had more direction. They were taking the set down. The stuff fighting on the commentary table where Rock picked up the camera and started trash-talking Austin, that stuff actually worked, like, so much better than the WrestleMania match. So I was actually kind of getting into it. Plus, Steve Austin at this point was a god among insects. He had, like, in the fans' eyes at these shows, he had descended from the astral plane. At one point, they go out next to the ramp, so they're by the bleacher area, and you see this mass of people leaning on the railing on the edge of these bleachers, and the railing starts to, like, bulge out. And you're thinking that this thing's about to blow, because so many people are piling over on that end of the bleachers just to be near them. That match was much, much, much cooler than I was expecting. And then at the end of it, of course, there's the iconic "Where to, Stephanie?"
Oh gosh!
Right at the end of the show.
I forgot about that. How do you rank them?
Oh geez. WCW's on the bottom. I'm not sure how to rank the ECW and WWF shows, because it's hard. I kind of want to give ECW a boost because it wasn't technically a pay-per-view. We're just watching it like it was.
Okay.
Do it, Glenn. Make a choice.
I'll put ECW on top, but not by a lot.
All right. Yay. They deserve a win now and again. They usually don't get the top spot.
They'll get the top spot throughout the rest of 99.
99 probably, yeah.
Very confident.
I am confident on that one.
Yeah, I think I've given the top spot to ECW a couple of times.
Yeah, not the best. The Attitude Era gets a lot of praise, but it did not produce the best wrestling shows.
Oh God, fuck the Attitude Era.
Yeah, but
it's such a conundrum, because there's some amazing storytelling and angles and the rise of Austin and Rock and Triple H, and you go back and watch it, and there's, like, some cool angles on the show. It's like watching old Raws, but then you're just like, ugh, every match is like 40 seconds with a run-in. I mean, it's just terrible. There's no wrestling. I mean, it's just god awful.
Yeah. But what was the best wrestling match on this show, Mark?
Ooh, the best wrestling match on the show. That is, like, I kind of want to give it to, I was torn between RVD Scorpio, which I did like a lot. You know what? I gotta give it. It's the shortest match, and I wish it was longer. But I'm gonna give it to Jerry and Jerry Lynn, because I just really loved it. It was just awesome all the whole time. So it's close though. I would put it tight with Mosca and Tajiri and RVD Scorpio are right up there as well, and nothing really too offensive, underneath it. So like you said, good show. But I'm gonna give the tip of the hat to Jerry and Jerry Lynn, because it was just cool.
Yeah, and Glenn.
I'm going to say the same. Tajiri is a guy who I always liked, but only seeing him in WWE, I'm realizing I didn't really see a whole side of what he could do. And seeing him in some longer matches and some better matches here, I'm really getting to like the guy. This match, like I said, I thought it was smooth. I thought it really flowed. I liked a lot of the work they put into it. I really liked that match.
Yeah, and I like that too. I liked a lot of matches on the show. I thought this was a top-notch show, but I would I like the Scorpio Arvidam match. I'm a big fan of Too Cold Scorpio, and I thought he it was much better than the Jerry Lynn one from the last pay-per-view. So I like that a lot. But what's next? What's the oh my god spot of the night, Mark?
Gotta go super crazy special. It was awesome. It's crazy to watch. Hence the name. hence the name, Crazy Special.
Glenn?
Taz Mission Tazplex.
Thanks. I'm going for the Super Michinoku Driver Death Spot that Taka pulled on Papa Chulo. And then MVP, Mark?
You know what? I'm tempted to give it to, you know, one of the guys that put on my favorite match, but I'm going to give it to Shane Douglas because he actually made me care about a Shane Douglas match, and I really had trouble caring about Shane Douglas matches. And, you know, I thought he really sold really well. He had great babyface fire and anger, and, you know, it was just a surprisingly good match. Not what I would call the best match of the night, but the crowd was really into it, and I got into it, so... There you go, Shane. I don't think I've given you one, so now you got one before you take off.
Glenn?
Lance Storm's urine.
Fair enough. I don't even know.
My runner-up is Rod Price, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He was great in his role. Oh, this is hard. Like, there was a lot of good matches, and there wasn't really a lot of promos to go with it, so you don't have, like, a two... prong attack to give people like bonus points. But I don't know. I'll give it to Scorpio. He made he had a long match with Rava and Dam, and those usually lose me. So this one being really good, yeah, I give him props for carrying that torch of the TV title. But I guess we're that's the end of the show, right? So what's going on? What do you have anything to plug, Mark?
Oh, you know, just my extreme libertarian podcast, which you can find at lionsofliberty.com and by searching Lions of Liberty on like iTunes and stuff. And you can hit me on Twitter, which I really don't tweet that much. So maybe I should if I'm going to give you my Twitter. But it's at Mark, M-A-R-C, the letter D, Claire, C-L-A-I-R, at Mark D. Claire.
Beautiful. And Glenn?
I was on a ton of podcasts a couple of weeks ago. For anyone who doesn't keep up with the Place to Be side of things, I did a SummerSlam 2002 rewind. I did a Raw live watch for July 93. I did the main event to recap SummerSlam weekend since I was at the Ring of Honor show that Saturday. And the other one I did that week was the ECW podcast. So here we are. I don't have anything coming up on the horizon very soon, but you know, we'll see. We've always got pans in the fire, as they say. I do the Wednesday walk around the web every Wednesday morning at placetobenation.com. It's a link roundup of things that I find amusing or notable or interesting or funny in some way, and sometimes a release valve for hardcore leftist sentiments as the need arises. If you would like to find me on the internet to challenge me to publicly urinate, you could find me on Tumblr at Glennibun, G-L-E-N-N-I-E-B-U-N. I am on Twitter in the same place, but I don't Twitter nearly as much as I used to. Or you can find me on Facebook if you really want to and are really dedicated to searching. But yeah, that's it. Give me a challenge anytime, any place.
Public urination if we need to. So what do I got? I have This Week in Wrestling every Saturday. Me Pete and Johnny going over everything from everywhere that we watched or wanted to talk about, which is fun. I'm also working on a Goldberg article that's going to be monthly. I'm trying to I think I'm going to watch every single Goldberg match on tape.
Interesting.
And review them, and I'm very fascinated on what his actual record is and what the record is that they talk about on TV and how far those go apart, and also how cool his squashes are, because those are amazing. I'm working on the first one now, and once I figure out exactly the format I want to use and stuff, I'm thinking once a month there'll be one where I go through his month going forward, but we'll see how that goes. Next time on a hardcore podcast, the Super Extreme Vault, we're going to take another side trip to avoid Hardcore Heaven, even though it's a great show, and that I don't know why we keep avoiding it. But we're going to look at some Japanese death matches, some Terry Funk, some Onita, some some women, some headhunters, all that fun stuff. So there's going to be blood. There's going to be bombs going off and barbed wire and all those fun things that Glenn loves so much. So next time we come back, we'll be looking at some Japanese hardcore extreme death matches. You excited for that, Mark?
I am. I think it even came from a vague suggestion of mine, so I should be.
Yeah, that's true.
Anything to avoid Hardcore Heaven.
Exactly. And I clearly picked the match where twins face off against each other to piss Glenn off. So we'll see.
Oh, no. Wait, that happened? Oh, man. Tell me they wear the same outfit.
That must be the ultimate tag team partners now have to face each other.
So we were looking at Headhunter A versus Headhunter B in a glass death match. But that's next time.
Oh, yes. God.
That's next time.
Oh, the best part is that they're A and B. That's even better.
So we'll be back in the future with another Super Extreme Vault. Thank you.
Oh, God.
And new Undertaker.
Just imagine,
brilliant idea.
When he gets his triumphant win to win the gimmick back.
Ooh.
Your winner and new Undertaker, The Undertaker.
Is he then a two-time Undertaker?
Yes, a two-time.
16-time Undertaker, The Undertaker.
He thus far has an uninterrupted 16-year streak of being the Undertaker.
Speaking of a streak, holy shit. That's insane.
26.
26
Sorry.
Years streak.
What is numbers? Yeah.